And George, take it away. Tell us about your experience and what brought us today to this place and how you can help people listening in for this next year in doing that highest, highest amount of impact with lowest amount of effort and getting their teams to where they can be high producing, high functioning sales teams.
Thank you. Thanks for the warm introduction. Yes, my name is George, and the you mentioned that I'm the founder and CEO of Membrane, and maybe to give you some backdrop, I could share how that came to be. And it was really me failing to build a successful sales team in a previous company that I started. So I think I really came to the conclusion that I had been doing a number of faulty assumptions. So I was assuming that salespeople who had sold something before could sell successfully for me, which was wrong. And I was also assuming that salespeople by nature are very disciplined and structured, which wasn't always true either. And I also thought that systems designed for salespeople, the CRMs out there, were designed to make salespeople more effective. And all of these things, I came to realize that they just weren't true. So that was sort of the birth of why I started this new company called Membrane. It's like, how can we sort of get away from these assumptions and instead introduce a way of working in selling that takes away this notion that salespeople are born and instead introduce a way of executing a strategy that we've designed and really believe in. So that was the start of this whole journey that I'm on now. And I think also another conclusion that I made was that everything needs to be centered around the buyer, which sounds pretty obvious, but sometimes it's just not. We're trying to sell our solutions and our products and offerings without really understanding how the buyer makes a decision. And I think especially now, when everything is becoming so competitive and everything is available online for buyers, so all the offerings look pretty much the same. So how can we differentiate in a world where everything looks the same to the buyer? So this is also something that I believe really brings out the importance of how we sell. So how we sell, I think, is going to become even more important in the future. To make our company stand out in the competition, and that starts with understanding the buyer, right? Who are we trying to help? Mm-hmm. What are we trying to help them with? Who are the other people in this space that we are competing to for their mind share? And how are we different? And how do we communicate in a way that makes us stand out and makes us interesting? So there are so many things we need to think about and do right. And then at the end of the day, it has to be executed with discipline every day. In between, there are tons of things that we could do wrong. Okay, a very long rant. But I think it's really about having a strategy that is centered around your buyer, making sure that everyone has the skill set to execute that, and then having the processes and the technology as well to make that happen in a very disciplined and professional way. That all needs to come together somehow, which is the big challenge, right?
Right, right. And then the other challenge is we have dual roles for reps. Some reps are prospectors, closers, servicers in a lot of industries still today. We have the predictable revenue model where we separate out some of those roles. We may have someone dealing just with inbound inquiries. We may have someone doing outreach to cold accounts or to warm up that chill. You know, so the sales manager is faced with, you know, I love what you're saying, but like, where do I begin? Where is the magic checklist? You know?
Yeah. No, definitely. And so I think that's a good insight that you've been working with and touting also, which is that these are really different processes within the overall sales process, right?
Yes.
And And just having that insight is great. And knowing that there will be different types of people needed in those different roles. And you touched on management. I think that's a huge leverage in the sales profession today. If sales managers had more, or let's say the time and the will to become better coaches, I think that would make a huge impact on revenues. Because mm-hmm. I see a lot of times sales managers, they're promoted to sales managers, but they may not have the skill set to be a great manager, or they're bogged down in all these reporting and the Excel files they need to produce for everyone. So they don't have time or skills or the attitude or the mental willingness to do coaching in a good way. And I think that's a huge leverage if that can be done right, that mm-hmm. could really move the needle.
Right, right. So where do you see in your work now, if we were to, since I'm a process person, I'm going to force you to split the pipeline. Okay. Where do you really like to focus? If you go in and things are broken everywhere, you know, where do you focus first? I mean, if I was a manager coming in to a company, you know, we're not getting enough leads, our close rates suck, we have basically our lifetime value of clients is just hurting, you know, where do you start? Is there a process of hierarchy of where you would begin to start fixing things? Since you can't fix the whole thing, where do you think the biggest bang for the buck is in putting this type of process effectiveness loop that you're talking about in?
Yeah, well, I think that's going to be very different, of course, depending on the type of company. But I think we should start with the client, so the customers. Who are we trying to sell to? Who mm-hmm. have we been successful selling to and profitably? And that's also an interesting question to ask, because sometimes we chase the top line so much that we drive revenues that may not even be profitable. So which clients have we been or should we be able to attract and win their business and deliver so that they're happy? And then we should design a strategy to get more of that business. So I guess I would start with understanding who's the customer. Are we targeting the right customers? Because I see a lot of times, especially now with this whole inbound marketing and content marketing hype that's been going on, that we attract a lot of leads to the websites. Mm-hmm. But sometimes those are not the right type of leads. So you have sales teams chasing the wrong type of deals, because they're chasing and everything that comes through the door or through the website.
Right. Right. And I see that still to this day. I call them minnows and whales. We get a lot of minnows, some whales on the inbound side, and reps chase the minnows just as hard with as much effort and time as the whales.
Yeah, and I think that's a typical mistake that's made, and the qualification process is poor. So there's nothing really guiding the reps to say, okay, this is one you shouldn't spend time on, and this one you should spend time on. So I think that's an area that's pretty easy to fix mm-hmm. and can make a huge difference. But then I talk a lot about just reducing the number of mistakes that we make.
Oh, that's an interesting concept. Let's talk about that. I like
yeah,
that.
Because, that's really one of the ideas I had also when starting this company, because in the previous company, I saw that salespeople were making a lot of mistakes. So we sold in that company an IT automation product, a piece of software that could really make an IT service provider much more efficient and effective. But it was a pretty hefty investment for those companies. And from a business standpoint, it was a pretty easy pick. Do you want to go from like 3% profit margins to 30% profit margins? All CEOs would say, yeah, sure, of course, absolutely.
Right.
But unless you got the technical people on board, they were very afraid of the solution, because they thought it was going to make them make their jobs go away. So that was one mistake I saw the salespeople doing all the time. They didn't get the technical people on board. So their deal stalled and their deals died. So that's a typical mistake I think a lot of salespeople do. They don't involve all the stakeholders in the deal. or they run with a few stakeholders, and then at the end of a 3 to 6 month sales cycle, someone pops up their head and say, "This is a very stupid project. Let's just cancel it. We have better things to do."
Right.
So that's a typical mistake I think a lot of sales teams do. They're just failing in identifying all the right stakeholders. And there are probably tons of other mistakes. So I think if we can just identify those mistakes and reduce them, we can do a pretty substantial improvement.
Now, you mentioned early on in the discussion about the CRM and your awareness around the tool itself, the way we track, the way we traverse down the pipeline. How, in eliminating mistakes, where do you go look to see what's wrong? Is it the CRM? Is it interviews? How does one go about systematically defining what these mistakes are, looking for those gaps?
Yeah, I think the problem with the traditional CRM systems is that they don't really provide any granularity in the sales process. They're pretty rough. You basically ask the salesperson to select the stage the deal is in, and the rest you need to go dig up in notes somewhere. Hopefully they're in there. But I think usually, and the way I found out was just in the deal reviews and in deal coaching, when asking salespeople, so, okay, this is a great deal. You're very happy about this deal, but you mentioned you don't know who their CTO is.
Mm-hmm.
You haven't figured that out, because if you don't get that person on board, how do you think this deal will go? Maybe that person will object. Maybe they're afraid. Have you seen this before? So it was a lot in the deal coaching that we could find out these mistakes. And I think that's a lot of sales managers do that, and they do that well. But the question becomes, how can we systemize that, right? So
right.
That it's always done, not just by manual probing in manager sessions, but the systems should be making sure we don't make these mistakes. And I read a really interesting book on this topic, actually. It had nothing to do with selling whatsoever, called The Checklist Manifesto. I don't know if you've heard about it, but it's an American surgeon. And they were approached by, I think it was the World Health Organization, who said that the number of surgeries is going up exponentially. Just one problem, people are dying
post-surgery. Yes.
And so they asked him, okay, you're a Harvard surgeon, your team, you're great. Let's help us understand why this is happening and how we can prevent it. And pretty quickly, they figured out that people were dying and there were complications post-surgery because of simple mistakes,
mm-hmm.
such as not washing their hands, anesthesia was off in the timing, and scalpels weren't disinfected, et cetera, et cetera. And they looked at that problem and said, okay, what should we do? Should we train them? It's like, no, they're very well trained. They should know these things. It's just, they're just forgetting about it, or things come in between. So they started looking at other industries and other professions, and they saw pilots, for instance. They all use checklists. Like, okay, that's interesting. They don't take off with a plane unless they've really checked out all the things. And if those things they have on the checklist were missed, that could jeopardize lives.
Mm-hmm.
So they went back to the surgeons and said, hey, we think this is a really good idea. Let's introduce checklists. So before we put the scalpel through the skin, we have to do these things. What do you think? And they were all like, no, that's silly. I've been a surgeon for 25 years. I don't need no checklist.
I know what I'm doing.
Yeah, I know what I'm doing. That's really stupid. But they did try it anyway, and they reduced the number of deaths with 47%.
Wow.
I think that's staggering.
That is staggering.
And I mean, surgeons and their teams are very highly trained people.
Mm-hmm.
So I always tell that story to sales managers and salespeople. Like, don't you think we should have a checklist as well? Prevent killing deals.
Mm-hmm.
We do these mistakes that kill deals, and salespeople do these mistakes all day long. So let's just introduce more structure and a process that's more, let's say, granular, so that we don't miss anything that's really important. And I think that's an interesting
It is an interesting concept, but, you know, once again, not unlike surgeons, salespeople love to think of themselves as each deal is unique. Every client is different. So we can't possibly have an underlying process because it ebbs and flows.
Oh, have you heard that as well? Yeah, no, but I, and then in part, of course, it's absolutely true. But there are some things that are always the same. We're helping right. a buyer make a decision, and throughout that decision, there will be milestones. There will be small decisions that have to be made. There's information that we need to gather. So a lot of things are very similar throughout the sales cycle, even though each opportunity is different. So
What I like about that, and I'm just kidding you about that because I hear that all the time from people and I snicker and laugh. But, you know, one of the things that I tell folks is, look, once we get it into a checklist format, the number of milestones, the number of what I call points of interest, I get people to think of this as like being on a freeway here in the States where there are mile markers that show forward movement. There's exits that basically exit out of the pipeline when you know that, you know, it's not a fit now, it may never be a fit. And then there's this points of interest that allow you to traverse to the next important, meaningful stage. So when you think about it that way, there's not a lot of stuff that we really want you to track or to be able to converse with us about in relation to the entire deal. So it shouldn't be that difficult to give us 3 to 5 things versus the hundreds of things that can go on. If we have a checklist to guide us, then we just, you know, our meetings are shorter because we just go down the checklist and we go through the things that where we are relative to goal. And we know positionally where things are because the checklist align to points of interest or levels of probability in the opportunity pipeline.
Yeah, but I think one interesting piece or concept with the resistance of checklists, I think, is our willingness to have autonomy in what we do. And I think a lot of salespeople especially like the freedom or the autonomy in their work, that they can be creative and they feel that process is sort of standing in their way for that creativity.
No, you're right. It exists, but in prospecting, it can exist like that in prospecting. I mean, it just will not work if we try to allow too many free spirits out there doing whatever they need to do.
No, I agree. I agree with you. I'm just saying, I think that's sort of to understand why that pops up. I think that's a big part of it. And also, I think a checklist, so I always say that a sales process is not a recipe. Because a recipe is very like, okay, you have this many tablespoons of that and very rigid, and then you come up with an end result. And of course, selling is not really that rigid. You have a sales process which is more guiding, and then it should be dynamic as well. So if we find out that the customer is in a particular industry, or we know that maybe we have different scripts and this is a different buyer, so it needs to be, can't be too strict and it can't be too rigid, but
right.
has to be there, I think. And it's like, I wouldn't even go grocery shopping without a shopping list because I'll forget something.
Mm-hmm.
So why should we
expect I agree. I think the points of interest are the main milestones, whatever you want to call them. The concepts of project management and understanding how to leverage the brain power that we have in our teams into a process that works for everybody is, to me, I mean, that's the baseline of what you're talking about. It's sitting down in that planning session together, brainstorming, you know, what's real. They call it the fog effect. What's fact, what's opinion, and what's guess? And creating those milestones based on as much fact as possible instead of the opinions and guesses, which a lot of salespeople like to live in the world of opinions and guesses. Once we all agree that we can get into some type of structure that's not overwhelming, that we can follow but still have our creative side addressed, is, in my opinion, the best way to attack some of these issues that we're having. Now, I'm not a bottom funnel expert like you are, and I have, luckily, at top of funnel, there is less resistance to the creative side because people know that we're dealing with higher numbers of records to begin with. Can't possibly get through them all without some type of process underlying it. But then when it gets handed off to an opportunity, that's when things get fuzzy and gray.
Yes, I would agree.
Yeah. And hence the reason why Mary Lou doesn't cross that line.
Yeah, and that's the challenge I'm working on. Yeah, and I think another issue we're facing is the analytical part. So how can we do win-loss analysis, and how can we really look at the pipeline and what we are doing that's working and what we're doing that's not working as well, and how can we improve the process? Because I think a process is never completed. It's a living document.
It's living, it's lean, it's constantly getting iterated.
Yeah. But if you don't look at the analytics, then you won't know really what to improve upon. And I see a lot of sales leaders not really looking at the analytics in a way that I would like them to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a more like in-depth analytic.
So George, we're running out of time. I could talk mm-hmm. to you forever. I would like you to kind of let us know where we should, if we were to pop onto your membrane website and say, okay, he's speaking my language. I'm drinking that Kool-Aid. I really want to know more. Where would we go find more information on you, your process, your company, your history, et cetera?
Yeah, thank you. So membrane.com is the product website, the company website. So you'll find information there. Connect with me on LinkedIn is probably the easiest. So I'm very active on LinkedIn. So George Bronton, it's a weird last name, which makes it easy to find. Or just email me at george@membrane.com.
And just for the you guys out there, George has done a lot of articles, a lot of blog posts on this topic. Makes a lot of sense as to you know, outlining the challenges that we're facing. And as we move into the new year, it's a good time now to sit down and plan out, you know, what area of the pipeline, starting with the buyer, as he said, what area of the pipeline can we affect first quarter and just chunk away at it, because that's really how this works. When you're leveraging the strategies, the buyers, the skill sets, the process, coaching, you know, we can only take off a little bite and perfect that and then move on. And knowing that we're going to come back to that bite because it's never perfect, but at least have a system in place that we can strategize against and make sure that we're continuing to optimize that process. George, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.